Hi, folks. Welcome back to the Be a Better Ally podcast. My name is Trisha Friedman. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. Now, those of you who are familiar with the work that I'm doing around AI literacy, you know that I am a big proponent of my WISE activity. I'll leave a link to that over there in the show notes. But essentially, it's meant to help engage students and also our peers in critically reading the marketing of new AI technology and generative AI tools. That's why when I learned all about Latimer AI, I was really impressed with their model, and I think you will be too. They aspire to be AI for everyone, and they're actually taking action to do that. Now, in that critical reading, I often recommend that teachers take students through the activity of finding out how they can give different tools feedback. Is there an easy way to contact that company, to reach out to them, tell them what you think, and learn more about them? So I did just that. I reached out to Latimer, and today's episode is proof that they responded, and they responded with a lot of generosity. I'm speaking today with John Passmore, who's the founder and CEO of Latimer, as well as the CTO, Melor Narayan. And I'm going to link to a few other places where you can learn about the work that they have both been doing. They are both leaders in their own field. And they're going to walk us through why Latimer is different and why it's such a powerful example to show to your students who also might be thinking about what they want the future of AI to be. Thanks for tuning in. And let's welcome to the show, John Passmore and Melor Narayan. I am thrilled to be speaking with the two of you today about Latimer AI, which, again, folks, you'll be able to head over to the show notes to learn all about this incredible innovation. And I think, you know, it's kind of time to almost take that term back when we're talking about AI and really looking at the ways that people are truly doing something different. So Latimer AI is named after Lewis Howard Latimer, the African-American inventor and patent craftsman who may not have been a household name before, but I think will be moving forward. And it is specifically trained in a much different way from the other large language models that people are likely familiar of. I'm wondering if you can take our listeners through that intentional and unique training model that Latimer AI brings.
Yeah, John Passmore, I can kind of jump in here first. Lewis Latimer, was an inventor, maybe overlooked in terms of, you know, his contributions with folks like Alexander Graham Bell or Thomas Edison. We don't have a video to go to see who actually invented what, but we think that he was right there for many important inventions that he wasn't really credited for and widely considered a genius. And I think what we're thinking in creating Latimer is that, you know, when we look at some of the large language models that have been developed and released, they're simply just not very inclusive. So, you know, I think everybody was really excited about them. We noticed that they had bias. Then we noticed that there were inaccuracies. And what we launched is considered kind of a RAG model, meaning that we have a data set that sits on top of a foundation model. And if there's a question or a query coming from a consumer that our data set, which is focused on Black and Brown history and culture, can answer better than the foundation model, it pulls the information from us. So, you know, we've used very specific data from textbooks, from dissertations. We have a license from the New York Amsterdam News, which is the second oldest Black newspaper in the United States, to use their data going back to about 1929. So all of this data, really rich history and cultural data, and we're just able to answer certain questions better than some of the foundation models that we're all seeing out there.
Yeah, and I think if somebody is thinking, okay, I'd love to see how does better play out? Listeners, I would strongly encourage you, whatever, you know, sort of chatbot you've been using, ask it to recommend five books that a K-12 school leader should read. See what the results come up with. Then use Latimer AI. Prompt it the same way. I think you're going to be astounded by the difference, the culturally responsive answer. You know, John, I was mentioning to you, it also, I think, for educators, it gives more focus on, like, I'm going to meet you with voices of educators, too. So that was one of the first kind of comparison tests that I drew. And I love you talking about Lewis Latimer and how, you know, there is no AI without data. Data is information. Everybody always says information is power. And so I kind of love the almost like meta version of, like, let's also think about ways that we can kind of be archivists and even with your name, kind of correcting, you know, that issue that some people were not a part of the quote unquote data. So I really appreciate you highlighting that as well. I've been following the story of the partnerships that Latimer AI has been building. You mentioned the journalism example, which I think is really great because I think a lot of folks are talking about what does AI mean with journalism. And I'll link to, there's a wonderful episode of On the Media that explores that partnership. Can you say more about the ways that you're working with others and maybe why partnerships are also important to the values of Latimer AI?
Well, we want to license all of the content. We're not scraping the internet like some of the foundation models have done. Number one, that introduced, I think, their huge bias issues. When you go to Reddit or YouTube and you scrape comments, I think we all know what that could mean. And then just from a fairness standpoint, from somebody that's been in the media for many years, I don't think it's just fair to use all that content. And especially if we're kind of a commercial organization, as is ChatGPT, as is Gemini at Google, you know, these are profit-making businesses. I think ChatGPT's on a run rate to make about $1.8 or $7 billion this year. So to not share that revenue based on the content or share somehow, you know, you have to kind of create some sort of partnership. I understand that it's all new. But that's kind of the path that we're heading down. And I think it's important to have partnerships both on the content side. And then we have partnerships even on the software development side. We announced a partnership with Morgan State University where we'll work with some of their researchers and take some of their research around bias and interactions and create actual products.
Yeah. And again, folks, you can learn more about those emerging partnerships from the website itself. And I kind of feel like it's such an exciting time. I'm guessing it sort of feels like it's just the beginning. I don't know if that's how it feels for you, because I realize this is probably a long time in the making, many, many conversations.
A lot of conversations. And Melor, did you want to jump in on, I mean, Melor's our CTO, so he leads a lot of those conversations with folks like Morgan State and building whatever's next for Latimer.
Yeah, I mean, in the AI space, as you know, Tricia, things are moving real fast. I mean, every day there's a new announcement coming in from every corner of the world around a new model or faster, better. But the hardest nut to crack there is really the how do you make it more inclusive? How do you make it more representative of the world culture, right? So that everybody has access to it and it's democratized in a way that everybody can benefit from it as well. So I think that's part of, that's one of the hardest things. And that's why I joined hands here with John to really help him build the technology around not just the language model itself, and the data, of course, is critical, but the partnerships with other researchers is critical in terms of determining how you measure bias, how you detect it, and how can you mitigate the bias so that the audiences that are using the tool can feel like they are heard and that the outputs are also more representative of their own perspectives and is inclusive in every way possible.
And I wonder with those partnerships and that work, I would imagine You know, I was listening to this interview with the former CEO of Wikimedia, who was, you know, reminding us that while in the West, we hear a lot of sort of like doom scrolly news about really just feeling like AI is going to take over, the Terminator situation. And she points her listeners to some research that says the Global South actually overwhelmingly has had a much more positive response to AI. And she reminds us to think about when we say like, oh, you know, the world is really upset about AI. Well, whose perspective is kind of being centered in that comment? And I'm wondering how the two of you kind of balance. You are very aware of where things can go wrong. You've mentioned that several times. I'm wondering where your optimism or your hope with this technology may rest, or, you know, things are very exciting right now. I'm kind of wondering if you have either hopes or visions for what this is going to mean. I feel like I can't even say a few years because, as you mentioned, it's changing so quickly. The analogy I give is often for anybody that's ever had a dog over 35 pounds, the rate at which that dog grows and can do things, like that's kind of how I feel like generative AI technology is. But would you say that you feel optimistic having the very unique leadership perspective with AI that you have? Are you hopeful?
I'm definitely optimistic. I think that there is so much to benefit from. There's certainly, you know, some potential pitfalls. We're kind of aware of some of the issues around jobs. But, you know, what we've done is we've started working with HBCUs wherever we can, historically Black colleges and universities, where they're messaging their students. If they use the tool, we make it free for the entire student population at that university. We want to continue to do that. We want to have on-campus events where we can bring the technology and technologists to campus. We want people to not only, you know, use it, but look at how you can be a creator. So, you know, we've reached out to companies like Google and Adobe and, hey, let's go on campus, take these tools on tour and really show people what they can do with them and how that they can, you know, use their creativity, build a business with these tools and not just simply use them to, you know, help you with your homework.
Yeah,
yeah, my perspective is similar in that, you know, I believe AI has a lot to offer. You know, technology in general has a lot to offer and really helps marginalized communities and underrepresented communities leapfrog, you know, waves of tech cycles to be able to get ahead, right? So a simple example is just in terms of learning, give you, you know, what would normally take, as we normally say, 10,000 hours to become an expert, you can probably do that in a lot faster. And that gives people who don't have access to the same amount of time, or energy, or resources, be able to develop those skill sets much faster.
Yeah, you know, and I think you've got partnerships at the university level. I also am seeing a lot of great practice with tools like this at the younger level. A lot of schools I work with, one of the number one issues that they tell me they hear all the time from parents and caregivers is their children not knowing how to sort out friendship dilemmas, friendship, you know, kind of dynamics and issues. And so a little bit of a prompt template that I've been sharing is walking them through how you actually generate a script, like have it create three fictional students who are a certain age, ask them, you know, make them have completely different lived experiences and backgrounds and have them talk through, be really specific with the context. And look at that as kind of like a, what's in this script where, oh yeah, I would say that to my friend.
No, that's fantastic.
Or no, here's what they should have said, you know, instead. And so I think a lot of that just social collaborative dynamics, we all of a sudden also have this tool that really is going to support students, not just in academic areas, but in social areas as well. So, you know, that's really exciting. I feel like you've set the bar really high with Latimer AI. Your marketing says it's AI for everyone, and that's aspirational and also extremely difficult, right? What are you doing to hold your own company accountable to a goal like that? What does AI for everyone mean to you?
For me, it means that I think that we all want AI that's accurate. So even though that, you know, we've initially focused on Black and Brown history and culture, we think that everybody would want to have accuracy in that regard. And, you know, I think when we look at, you know, indigenous cultures and other folks that maybe aren't represented in the way that they feel that they should be represented, you know, we look at that as something that we want to get to. So we do want to be the platform that is sensitive to that, to the degree that we can.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way that we're building the platform is to look at a few things: accuracy, as John pointed out, completeness of information, and you know, also the integrity of the information that's in there, to the extent possible, and making it more accessible to every individual that is looking for information or looking for to accelerate their own careers or knowledge.
Well, I am really happy to hear that response. An activity that I also recommend teachers do with students is that critical close reading of all of this new generative AI technology that comes out. Look deeply at its marketing and then kind of do lateral reading to do some research. You know, what they are saying they're aiming to do. Where do you see that action in place? And another little kind of thing that I say is, whenever you're looking at a tech company, look to see how hard it is to offer feedback or to connect with somebody at that company. And, you know, obviously I reached out to your email address and I was like just blown away with how responsive and, you know, your generosity with coming on the show. But I think those things are really important. And I think that, again, young learners can learn a lot about, I think, like, not just AI ethics, but business ethics in terms of a company's responsiveness or willingness to engage. Is that also sort of something that is important to you right now? Or, and if it is, are there other aspects of feedback you'd love to hear from schools, from educators, from school leaders about when it comes to Latimer AI?
We get a lot of feedback, and we appreciate all the feedback because we're, you know, we just launched January 22nd. So, you know, we're still building, we're still identifying, you know, content resources. We're still identifying use cases. We focused, I think, initially maybe on universities or more so even parents that have, you know, kids, and they want to make sure that their children aren't, you know, insulted or, you know, encountering bias as they're doing their homework. But you've mentioned, you know, younger kids, which, you know, it's come up a couple of times. And I think it's, you know, that's an amazing use case for what we're doing. So, you know, we're really just getting started and appreciate your feedback. We get feedback through the website. We get feedback through social, and we listen to all of it.
Yeah, in fact, a lot of the feedback has come from early education folks, right? So it's very interesting that a lot of the feedback is coming from universities, from K-12 teachers, researchers, learning researchers. And it's been very, very useful. In fact, yesterday I sent something to John that was my son and I. We were watching this movie called The Debaters from 2007 with Denzel Washington in it. And he almost impulsively, his first reaction is to go Google it. And I say, why don't you do check it on ChatGPT and also check it on, test Latimer with the same question. And he came up with two completely different responses, which one being a lot more inclusive, a lot more descriptive and even the way it was articulated was very different. And that's a great example.
Yeah. Again, listeners, I would strongly encourage you to do a few of those side-by-side comparisons. The other one that you brought up, parents, that's really interesting is talk through a little bit of a dilemma issue and ask it for some of that advice in terms of partnering with parents in schools to support their child. The Latimer responses are far, far, far higher quality. So I just, again, I really look forward to following and seeing where Latimer goes. And it's been such an honor to speak with both of you at this stage of its journey. Congratulations again. And yeah, thank you again for bringing it into the world. I think it really sets a great example for young learners who also perhaps one day would like to build a platform themselves.
Thank you, Tricia, for having us. Very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Tricia.
Folks, as always, thank you for tuning into the podcast. Next week, I head off to Malta for the CISA event, where I'll be presenting on AI inclusion and human-centered AI literacy. If you're there, reach out. Let me know that you'll be there. The podcast is going to take a short break until April. In the meantime, you can always catch me on the Shifting Schools podcast, or watch out for the incoming next season of the Unhinged Collaboration podcast. With Pride Month being just around the corner, if your SOGI or GSA group would like a 30-minute free session on ways to use tools like Latimer AI in the planning of Pride, reach out to me. My email address is over there in the show notes. I'm offering 3 30-minute free workshops for those student advocacy groups. So please don't hesitate. Reach out. I'd love to connect with you and your students. Thanks again for listening.